I'm about to start Daf Yud Aleph, but there's a little piece of Gemara on the bottom of Daf Yud Amid Beis, which I didn't do yet. The Gemara here on Daf Yud Amid Beis is bringing a whole series of statements of Rava Bar Machasya in the name of Rav Chama Bar Guria in the name of Rav. So that whole transmission. So what we're up to is approximately, I would say, seven lines up from the bottom of the Amud. You'll see the two dots. And he says the following. Li'olam yechazer adam v'yeshev bi'ir she'yishivasa krova. Now here the word krova apparently doesn't mean what it usually means, that it's closer in distance. But krova means that more recently it's been settled. Shemitok sheyishivaso krova avonoseha mu'otim. In other words, there are less sins in the city. I'm going to derive this from Stone. If the city was more recently settled, we have a concept in halacha called nismala sasasam, which means that their package of sins has filled up to the top. And we have a rule, which Rashi already codifies in his Pirush al Torah in Parshas Lech Lecha, that Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nifra Mi Uma Ad Shetismali Sasa. Now, of course, the best thing to do would be to settle in the city of Tzadikim, so that you don't learn from the Maaser Rishoyim. But if there are no Tzadikim around, and you have to just choose a city to settle in, then it's better that you, preferable that you sit in a city, you settle in a city which is not totally immersed in sin. And therefore, he says that the more recently settled city is a better idea. Where does he learn it from? Shenemar. Now, we're talking about Lot, and the Malachim, angels turn to Lot, and they say to him, at the time that they take him out of Sodom, before they destroy Sodom, Hine noh ha'ir azos krova lanu shama, v'hi mitzar. So that, actually, if I'm not mistaken, it's Lot talking to the Malachim. And he says, look, there's a city very near here named Mitzar, and I would settle there in Mitzar. And Imolta Nosh Shama, I'll settle there. Hello, Mitzar Hu Usachi Nafshi. And there's Mitzar, and I will save myself there in the city. Okay then. So the Gemara asks, my Krova. What does he mean when he says that the ear is krova, the city is close? Ilema, if it means krova, dimekarva, it's closer in distance, uzuta, or it's a smaller city, he says, vakachazule, the malachim themselves would definitely see that. So why would Lot feel that he has to tell the malachim? Anybody would see that it's a, you know, it's a closer city, and it's a smaller city. Ella, but rather, he meant something more esoteric. Shemitok sheyishivasa krova means it was settled more recently. Avanoseha mutz'ayim means there are less sins in the city, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is less likely to destroy that city than the city of stone. Amar Rabbi Ovin, Mikra, Amar Rabbi Ovin, Mikra, where do we find some sort of a remez, some sort of allusion in the Pasuk? Dechsiv, it says over there, Imolta Noshama, I will please kindly run away as a fugitive to that city. And the word Na is Bigmatria 51, Chamishim V'chad Havi. But if you count the number of years since Sodom was settled, Shel Sodom Chamishim Chamshin Utrei, was 52 years. So Sodom was the first city in that cluster of cities that was settled, and the second one was called Mitzar, or Tzoar, and that was settled a year later. So Tzoar is, again, it's all relative, but she was a more recently settled city than Stone. And Rabbi Ovid continues, and he says, Vishalvasa, which means that the time of the peace of Stone, Hayach, and here we go on to Yud Alef Amud Alef, Hayach, Chaf Vav, it was Esrim V'Sheish Shanim, it was 26 years. Dichsiv, Shtemesre Shana Avdu, Esk Dola Omer, Shloshesre Shana Maradu, Ubarbasre Shana Bok Kdola Omer. So basically, the Gemara now is making a calculation that the king. There were four kings. There was Melech Sdom, there was Melech Amora, Melech Adoma, and Melech Tzvoyim. Oh, and the fifth king was Melech Bela. So we have these five kings, and those five kings for 12 years served Kedola Omer, and then for 13 years they rebelled against Kedola Omer, and in the 14th year of that merit, Kedola Omer comes and he fights the battle and defeats them. And afterwards, Avram defeats them, and he saves Lot. So that all told, if you count the numbers here, you have 12 and 13, and then there was we have 26, and those 26 years were the years of Shibud, of servitude and battles, and after that, and only after that, there was some sort of peace in the land for Stone. In any event, it turns out that the minion of the number of the years of Yeshivas Shel Stone was 52 years, and the Zman Shalvasa was 26 years. So Stone was destroyed in the 99th year of Avram Avinu's life, and that was the same year in which Avram Avinu got the message from the three Malachim about the birth of Yitzchak, because Yitzchak was born exactly when Avram Avinu was 100 years old. So that basically what happens is that the final defeat of Sdom, it takes place when Avram Avinu is 99 years old, and again at that time he got the besorah about Yitzhak, who was born a year later when Avram was 100. And all this we'll see in the pasuk in the parasha in Bereishis Chaf Aleph pasuk Hey. In Cain he says, Tosus here Dira Maskel Vishel, which is a sort of like a summary of the entire sugya, and he says that. Just to read a little bit of that Tosfos here, he says, just one second. Im Kain, if so, Ksharag Eskadola Omer, Esrim Vishesh Shanim Kodim Lachain, Hoya Ben Shivim Vishalosh, so that Kedola Omer was killed 26 years before that, when Avram Avinu was 73. I don't know, for some reason, the Seder Olam that goes through the history comes up with a different number, that Avram was actually 75 when he killed Kedola Omer. And B'tchilas Yeshivasam Chayu B'shalva Shtei Shanim, at the very beginning, before the wars broke out, there were 2 years of peace. After that, they were taken over by Kedola Omer. They served him for 12 years, and they rebelled against him for 13 years. And afterwards, they lived in peace for another 24 years. And this is all Tosfos Divrei Maaseh Vashel on Daf Yud Amud Beis. Another statement, Omer of Rava Bar Machasya, Omer of Chama Bar Guya Marav, the same tradition, Kol Ir Shegagoseha Gvoim Mi Beis HaKnesses L'Sof HaReva. This is an idea which later the Christians adopted, and they imitated us, that the highest building in any city should be the Beis HaKnesses. That's a respect, a kavod for the Beis HaKnesses. And if you have a city where the rooftops of the city are higher above the Beis HaKnesses, that's not a good omen for the city. Shenemar, Pasuk says in Sefer Ezra, L'romemes Beis Elokeinu ulamid es charvosav l'ases lanu gader v'yudav Yishalayim. It means, because of the Romamnu es Beis Hashem, we uplifted the house of God above all the other batim, therefore we merited to live Gader B'Yehuda. Gader, I guess, means in a built-up city, a walled city, in Yerushalayim, in Yehuda, all of Yehuda. It was an Ir B'nuya, and it wasn't destroyed. But if it would have been the other way, it would be not L'Romemis Beis Elokeinu, but rather our buildings are higher, then the opposite is true. Instead of giving us this so-called Gader B'Yehuda, meaning an ear shebnuya lavelo charev, instead it would be charev. Vani mili bibatim shedarim bahem avol bekishkushe va'avarvare. These are buildings that are built with towers and they're built for beauty's sake. Leslan ba, there's no isa, you're allowed to build them higher than the Beis HaKnesses. And this is a little bit counterintuitive, because you would have anticipated that if you have buildings that are built for beauty purposes and with towers in them, then they should not tower above the Beis HaKnesses. But yet, it's only a problem for houses that are for personal use. I'm going to read to you, I have a note here from the Meiri and from the Yaivitz, Rav Yaakov Emdin, and from the Rambam. So let me just go slowly here. The Meiri says that Migdolim, towers, ha'asuyim, that are built l'chizuk ha'ir, to strengthen the city, ubitzur hachoma. In other words, this is a way of creating a defense system for the city. So it's not the way Rashi said before, that these are buildings linoi, simply for, you know, architectural beauty, but rather this has something to do with the security of the city, these high towers. And he says, Hu adin, the same law would apply with regard to a bayis shesibas hagvoa eina mishum sukara el kdei laharbos diurim valios. Ah, here the Meiri is being very, very lenient, and he says that sometimes you have to build like a very large apartment building so that there'll be enough flats for people, and there again, it's not that we're trying to, you know, build a house above the Beis HaKnesses, but just simply for lack of space in urban planning, we had to build up higher and higher. The Aruch says no. We're talking about the Chomas Ha'ir. These towers are there for security. And the Yaivitz of Yaakov Emdin says that the word Kishkushe means Migdolim Asuyim LeKishkush. He says that these are very big bell towers, and again it is reminiscent of other religions, but the purpose of these bell towers in a Jewish neighborhood was for security, to gather the people together when there's a need, an urgent need to do so. Now, as far as building up buildings in a city in which these buildings would have a rooftop that's higher than the shul, so we have two opinions here. There's the Rush and there's the Rambam. So the Rush is of the opinion that the reason for this Isur is because of Bizayon Beis HaKnesses, you know, that you have a higher place. And also like Bia Batim Shemishtamshim Bigagoseim, But, you know, that these are buildings that you use, so you're using the roof, and it's above the shul, above the height of the shul. But batim asuim l'noi u'l'migdolim shalom ishtamshim bahem, that's not included in the Issa. So the Rush is supporting Rashi's view here, but it's a little bit unclear as to what the exact function or purpose of these migdolim are. Or these batim asuim l'noi. Noi means for beauty's sake. In other words, the whole Issa is to live in a domicile that's above the Beis HaKnesses in terms of the height. But if it's a building for beauty purposes, I don't know exactly what that means. I mean, it's very nice to have, some architectural beauty to a building. You know, if you go to certain cities, you know, you'll see beautiful buildings. But I'm not sure why that's not a problem. It's only a problem of deer. I don't know. That's what the Rush is saying, and he's apparently defending Rashi. Then he gives another case of batim shalonu shem mishupoim, which means they're sort of on a tilt, on an angle. And in that case, because of the slant of the building, we don't go up to the roof, and we don't use the roof. And that you're allowed to build, even if the roof will be higher than the Beis HaKnesses, because we don't use the roof in such a case. However, the Rambam says that when we're dealing with covered Beis HaKnesses, then even batim she'ein mishtamshim bahem, also livnosam gvoim mi beis haknesses. This is Rambam Hilchos Tefila Perek Yud Aleph. And the Rambam seems to be intuitive the way we learned it. That's the covered beis haknesses, that the beis haknesses should be higher. But according to the Rush, he's saying that the reason is that the very fact that you're using area for your own personal purposes above the Beis HaKnesses, that's called a bizayon to the Beis HaKnesses. But if not using that area, then you're not undermining the covenant of the Beis HaKnesses. So in any event, the bottom line is, the Rush would say, only certain types of buildings where the use of the building and the roof of the building is higher than the Beis HaKnesses, that's a problem of bizayon. But if the buildings are higher than the Beis HaKnesses, but they're not being used for living purposes, then that's not a problem. The Rambam would seem to say that the covenant of Beis HaKnesses requires that in all cases it be the highest building in the city. Next. Hani Mili, Omar Avashi, Ana Avdi Limasa Machasya Delo Charva. I did something that saved the city, this is a major city in Bavel, from destruction. How so? And again, apparently, Rav Ashi was the Rosh Yeshiva there in Masa Machasya. And what did he do? Apparently, he prevented them from building roofs that would be higher than the Beis HaKnesses. That was what he instituted in Mata Machasya. Okay, fine. The Gemara says, Vaha Charva. The history of it is that indeed the city of Mata Machasya was destroyed. He says, May also Avon Lo Charva. But the cause of the destruction of Mata Machasya was not the fact that the buildings were higher than the Beis HaKnesses. That much I was able to accomplish, says Rav Ashi, to prevent the destruction. Maybe he delayed the destruction of the city. Now the Rush writes that Rav Ashi forced the people of the city to actually lower their houses. And how does the Rush know such a thing? He says, Im Lokein, if he was just trying to influence them and inspire them that they shouldn't raise their homes higher than the Beis HaKnesses, so then what's the big deal? I mean, that's what every rabbi should be doing. He should be telling his flock, his members, his people, not to build these very high buildings. But the answer is, Rav Ashi was mechadesh, that even those who had already built the buildings, somehow he was able to compel them to lower their buildings. And you and I know that lowering a building is not a simple matter. You probably have to destroy part of the building, and who knows what else. The Rosh then quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, who interprets Rav Ashi as saying that what Rav Ashi did was he influenced or impacted upon the city to raise the Beis HaKnesses. Now, I don't know what it means like B.S. Beis HaKnesses. Does it mean that you just put bricks so that the ceiling rises higher? Or maybe it means that they added another floor? I know, for example, in the neighborhood in Katamon where I am, there's a shul that has three different floors. Every single floor is a different kind of minyan. You know, one is Ashkenazi, and one is Faradi, and one is Hasidish. He says, V'chein gabi ir shebotel kvar gvoim yosim veis haknesses. Tzarchlan micha. So you have two choices. Either you build the Beis HaKnesses higher, or you lower the other buildings. That's the way Rabbeinu Chananel understands it. Now, the Gemara Sakasha here, how could Rav Ashi say that he prevented the city of Matan Mechatzia from being destroyed? That's really not true, because Matan Mechatzia was destroyed. So, the Ben Yehoyada, that's the Ben Ish Chai, he asks the following question. Why didn't the Gemara ask this question on Rav? Right? Because Rav was the one who said originally that if the rooftops are higher than the Beis HaKnesses, then the city would be destroyed. And yet, in Matan Mechatzia, the buildings were not higher than the Beis HaKnesses. So why was the city destroyed? Right? We know the Rav Ashi took care of it and made sure that in Matan Mechatzia, the roofs of the city, the rooftops were not above the Beis HaKnesses. So the Ben Yehoyada says that Rav, who said that a city that has higher roofs than the Beis HaKnesses would be destroyed because that's sin itself, means even if they have no other sins, then it's possible that Matan Mechatzia was destroyed because of other sins. Meaning, all Rav meant to say is that if everything is equal and there's no reason for a city to deserve destruction, then this very one sin of the higher buildings, that itself could cause the destruction. But you can't prove anything from the fact that Matan Mechatzia was destroyed, because there may be other reasons that could cause and bring about the destruction of the city, other cities. But the kash is on Rav Ashi. Why? Because Rav Ashi says explicitly that he prevented the destruction of Matan Mechatzia. And that's not true, because Matan Mechatzia at the end of the day was destroyed. Next, another statement. Omar Rava Bar Mechatzia, Omar Rav Chama Bar Guri, Omar Rav, Tachas Yishmael Velo Tachas Nochri. So we have to make two points. So the word Tachas means I would prefer to be under the jurisdiction of Yishmael, even if I have to serve Yishmael, rather than Nochri. Now, who's Nochri? Nochmi is called Edom. Right? Edom is called the nation of Rishoyim, and we don't want to be under their control, because the Adomim have a more intense hatred for the religion than the Ishmaelim do. Again, I'm not sure that that's the case today, but at least that's the case at the time of Rav. Tachas Nochri Velo Tachas Chabor. I'd rather be under the Adomites, because in most cases they let us do the mitzvahs, but there's something called a nation called Chabor, which are the Parsiim, and they prevented Klal Yisrael from doing mitzvahs. So that's really bad. But you know what? Tachas Chabor velo tachas Talmud Chacham. Which means that even if Chabor is a very difficult place to live, there's a tremendous amount of pressure preventing us from doing mitzvot, but nevertheless it's better than a very dangerous situation in which we are under the control of a Talmud Chacham. Why? Because it's very difficult to have an absolute respect for the government, for the leadership, and therefore it's, I don't want to use the word inevitable, but let's call it highly likely that they'll be punished because of some sort of insult to the Talmud Chacham. Tachas Talmud Chacham v'lo tachas Yosam v'almana. Now, I would sort of divide this. So the Ritva says on these words, lo tachas talmidei chachamim, I efshal yizar b'chvodo umaro karoy. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to be absolutely careful about not insulting the honor and the dignity and the awesome fear that we have to have for talmidei chachamim, and therefore the punishment is probable. The Ben Yoyoda adds the following. He says that mutav lios tachas apo v'kaso shel chabor shemazik bepeulos gashmios lemata, even though we'll have physical anguish from them here down on earth, but efshel limtso trufa kenegdo, you know, we can have hope for some salvation. V'lo tachas apo v'kaso shel talmidei chachamim, because osa roshim lamala, that'll have an impact in Shamayim, and they will fight a battle for, you know, to defend the talmidei chachamim. Mutav sheyeh tachas apo v'kaso shel talmid chacham, because efshel afaiso, somehow we can pacify the talmid chacham, and he'll be mochalos. V'lo tachas apo v'kasam shel yosam v'almona. Because if we insult an orphan or a widow, then they don't have the wherewithal to be mispious. You know, they're crushed by any sort of insult that we have. Then we have Rabbeinu Chananel, and he says, Mutav lios tachas chabar, sheyesh bo koach lihinotzel, lahatzel miyad reshoim, bizroa roma. He says that the power of Chabar, which we said were the Parsim, correct? They have a certain power that maybe they could destroy some Rishoyim. You know, if they take the law into their hands, and they're very powerful against the Rishoyim. But in the case of Talmid Chachamim, they don't really have the power to protect the Jewish people, and certainly not the Yosem Valmona. The Omar, again, Rava Bar Machasya, Omar Rav Chama Bar Gurya, Omar Rav Kol Choli Velo Choli Me'ayim. I'm willing to suffer any disease that weakens a person, but not intestinal diseases. Those are the worst. Now, according to Marsha, you can add another Choli to the list of the most severe kinds of diseases, and that's Mechush HaRosh. My guess is he's referring to a migraine headache. In any event, in all these cases of stomach problems and head problems, it's very hard to find a refuah, says the Marsha. And he says that it's very hard to find someone who's called a Ben Gilo who could come and take away 1/60th of his disease. And the Gemara says in Masechta Nedarim, Ein mevakrim choli me'ayim mishum abusha. You know, the person who's suffering from these intestinal diseases, he's so embarrassed that people should not come and barge in on him, and even though they're coming for the right reasons to visit him. The Gemara says, Ein mevakrim choli arosh. You don't visit someone who has a very bad headache, because any kind of sound, even speech, could make his life even more miserable. Then he says, Kol ke'ev, every pain, he says, comes and goes, v'lo ke'ev lev. But it's, you know, if you have heart problems, that's the worst. Kol michush means, you know, some sort of like a headache or some sort of light suffering. And that's okay because it comes and goes, but velo mechush rosh, but not these strong headaches. Kol ra'ah velo isha ra'ah. I can tolerate all the evil in the world, but not a bad wife, an evil wife. So the Meiri writes, afal pi shaharbe dvarim adam tzarch livdok b'nesuei isha machmas yichusa ukroveha mitzad yichusa ukrosel mikomakom b'midosel b'tchunosel roi livdok b'yoseh. So there are many things you can check out about a wife before you marry her, like in terms of her lineage, her relatives, her parents, and so forth and so on. But the most important thing to check out, says the Meiri, is her midos, her tchunos, her attributes. That's where you have to be very careful, because ra'asa isha, the evil of a wife, is more painful than even a heart disease, so to speak. Okay. Then he says the following. Why is it that the Gemara has to tell us this? You know, can a person choose which ailment he's going to suffer from? It's not biyado, akol bidei shamayin. So what is he going to say? You know, this, you know, if I had to rate it, this is the worst and this is next to the worst. It's, what do you gain by all this? What is the Gemara trying to convey to us? So he quotes a sefer here who says the following. He says, this is all about tshuva. What does that mean? Be also ever sha'odom chotebo nifgam v'nasa choli nefesh. He says that with that very part of the body that a person sins and he's guilty of sin, he will get struck with a certain choli nefesh, means like a psychological impairment. The acharkach, and once he gets hit in that particular area, mispashet choli zeh b'chol haguf, then unfortunately the illness spreads throughout the body. Ushloshes dvarim elu, these three diseases, choli me'ayim, kev lev, mechush harosh, these correspond to the three, shall we say, pillars of sin, that's kina, taiva, and kavod. So I'm guessing that, because I don't have the sefer in front of me, that choli me'ayim is keneged taiva, and Mechush HaRosh is connected Kavod, Kev HaLev is probably connected Kina. That's just my guess. Lachain, Yeshlo Liodim Laharchik Atzvo Mehem. The message here is that he should be very careful to distance himself from these three cardinal Midos Ros of Kina, Taiva, and Kavod. Because Elu Motzien Es Adam in Olam. You know, if he suffers in these three areas of the body as a result corresponding to those three sins of Midos, he'll end up having to leave this world. But Ishara, that he says is Keneged Minus, which is Garua Mikulam. Now, I'm not sure why Ishara is Keneged Minus. I don't know that this bad wife is trying to influence him to drop it as far as Yiddishkeit is concerned. I don't know, what does he mean that Isha Ra is Keneged Minus? And that's Garua Mikulam, that's the worst of all. And he quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, Kol Ba'el Lo Yeshuvun V'lo Yasigu Orchos Chayim. So that part of the Ben Yoyada, I don't understand. We started with the Meiri, and we understood the Meiri, but this last part, I don't get it. In any event, the Medrash Rabbah in Koheles adds the following: Chisaron kis kasha mikulon. That poverty is the worst of them all. Why? Because chisaron kis kluim kol ro samuskaris b'tchila. The kiss, if his pocketbook is empty, he'll have choli me'ayim, he'll have michushe rosh, he'll have kevi alev, and he'll have ras isha as a result of all the fights that they're going to have because the bank account is in the minus. The Omar Rava Bar Machasya, Omar Avcham Bar Kuria, Bar Guria, Omar Rav, Im Yu Kol Ayamim Shabolam Dio, if all the waters in the world were ink, V'chol HaKonim V'shagam Kumusim, and all the reeds that would stick up from all the different marshlands and wetlands in the world were all kulmasim, were all quills. This sounds like nishmas, right? V'chol shamayim yurios, and all of the heavens would be would be paper to write on. V'chol b'neyon lavlorim, and all the people on the face of the earth were all scribes. Ein mesapkim lichtov chalola shel rishus. Is kol elu ein maspikim lichtov mashiyesh bechalola shel rishus. Okay, now we have to figure out what is chalola shel rishus. So in the Hebrew translation that I have, he writes, bi omek liba shel malchus. Shamelech tzarech lizbonein al kol medinosav ligvos mem mas hakotzuv lanayel kam milchomos v'kam mishpatim hakol biyom echad. What is this all about? He says that this is all about the respect that we have to have for the kingship. She'odom ispal b'shlomo shel malchus. We have to pray on behalf of the well-being of the kingship. Yahapik b'schusam v'yachriyam l'kafuschus kama sheyochol. We should try to be kind in our judgment of the state and try to figure out if we can come up with some merit to explain why maybe we shouldn't be blaming them for everything. Even if he sees that they're not running the country the right way, as far as he can tell, but mishum shei efshar lamod al omek kavanas amalchus, it's very difficult for the rank and file citizen to understand the deeper meanings and the decisions of the kingship. Banhogas hamedina b'shas maisa. The way that the kingship had to decide to rule over the country at action time, when it's action time. So again, all this is to give us a sense of gratitude for the, in our society, in our contemporary life, I think, our leaders are pretty outspoken about what they, what they believe or what their agenda is. So it's hard to imagine being melamed zchus, halola shel rishus. Halola means, to sing the praises of the malchus when we know exactly what their agenda is. Very often they don't hide their agenda. I could mention a whole bunch of political leaders today that are outspoken about their anti-Israel policy and so forth and so on, so that it's very difficult to find ways of praising the kingship. But yet at the end of the day, we have to be mispal b'shlomo shel malchus, to the extent to which our lives depend upon the malchus. Mikra, the Gemara says, is there a source for this in the Tanakh? Omar Av Misharshia quotes a pasuk of Mishlei, Shomayim la rum, v'eretz la omek, v'lev malachim ein cheker. That the heavens are up, high, high up, and the land is very deep. But yet, if you want to know ein cheker, what is beyond our comprehension, it's the lev malachim. So, if we cannot investigate and reveal the truth about the Gova Shamayim, or the depths of the earth, then how much more so in the case of the Lev Malachim, which is Rochav Lev HaMalachim. Again, these are all good leaders. They're friendly as opposed to tyrannical despots. Vaita Vyomar Rabba Bar Machasi Omar Rav Chama Ben Gurya Omar Rav Yofe Tainis Lechalom Keish Lina Ores. So if we want to destroy a bad dream, you know, undermine its ominous prophecy, then we have to fast in order to do so, to neutralize the power of the dream. And it's like Eshna Ores. It's like when you take some flax and you shake it up. Levat Lolo Tzia Me'olam. Now we really have to get rid of all the stuff that's on the flax, you know, by beating it and getting rid of it. And together with a fast, we can hope that we can defeat the prophecy, if you will, that's inherent in this bad dream. He writes in the footnote, in the name of a very famous sefer called the Sefer Chassidim, that tainis is bimkom chatos. That in our day we don't have a korban chatos, but the tainis, this bad dream, is a replacement for the korban chatos. Ma korban enomo below tshuva, af tainis chalom enomo ila below tshuva. When you bring a korban, you have to do tshuva in order for the korban to be effective. And the same thing applies in the case of a fast day, when he's fasting on as a result of a bad dream. It's not going to be effective without tshuva. So the bala korban has to do tshuva, and now the bala chalom has to do tshuva. Omer av chizda ubo bayon. When is the fast most effective to undermine and neutralize the bad dream? That's when he fasts on the very same day that he dreamt the dream. V'yomer Rav Yosef afilu b'Shabbos. Okay, we'll get to Shabbos in just a second. But first, as far as Rav Chizda is concerned, im shogag o nenas v'lois anavo bayom, for whatever reason he couldn't fast on the very same day following his bad dream, Yisana Lamochri can postpone it for a day. Umikomakom, Kevin She'en Koch Atainis Shalamochras Kolka Chazak, Eino Doche Shabbos. Wow. This is the Ritva. This is wild. We said, and Rav Yosef points it out explicitly, that the tainis for chalom is so important that it overrides the Shabbos. We have a mitzvah of Kibud V'yoneg on Shabbos, but we're going to completely trump that mitzvah for the sake of tainis. But only if it's bo bayom. Only if the tainis was on the very same day that he had the dream. But if, on the other hand, he couldn't fast on that day that he had the dream, so he pushed it off for a day, then we will not classify that tainis in this way, that it's such a great tainis, it's such a great mitzvah, and it's so pressing that therefore it overrides the Shabbos. We will not override the Shabbos unless it's a fast. Rav Chizda qualifies it bo bayom, and if it's bo bayom, it's the same day that you experience that dream, then Rav Yosef says hafilu b'Shabbos, you're allowed to fast even on Shabbos. This is called a tainis chalom. And although the Torah commands us in oneg on Shabbos, which means we have to eat and enjoy Shabbos, but he's in such anguish over the bad dream that he had, that he'll feel a lot better when he fasts, because he knows and he trusts that the bad dream will be nullified through his tainis. So that gives him a greater oneg, paradoxically, than eating. So he's allowed to do that on Shabbos. That's his mitzvah of oneg. Rav Yeshua Breda Rav Idi Ikla Lebei Rav Ashi. So he came to the house of Rav Ashi, Avdile Igla Tilsa. So they prepared a wonderful banquet in honor of Rav Yeshua. Now, what was so special about this banquet? They served a veal, I guess you'd call it, but it was the third child of the mother. and that's supposed to be the most tasty. That's called Egel Shenolad, a calf that was born Shlishi Limo, number three. In Mishubach Yoser, it's of a superior quality, Me'asher Egel, Arishon Vasheni, Mishum, Shebehema Bekatnusa, Eino Adayin Bekocha, because the mother that gave birth is not in her full strength when she gives birth to the first or the second, but rather she's most healthy when she gives birth to the third. I don't know what happens with the fourth. Maybe she starts weakening for the fourth. I don't know. However, there's a Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin. Rav Chanina, Rav Oshia, Osku kol Erev Shabbos b'Sefer Yitzira, that they used to spend Friday, I'm not sure exactly why Friday, maybe because it was the completion of God's creation, so they could learn how to create things. And they learned Sefer Yitzira, and what was born to them was an Igla Tilsa, was this Egel, what was number three. Again, I don't know what makes it number three if they created it with the Sefer Yitzira. But anyway, it's something that they ate L'Kvod HaShabbos. Egel Shegodal Shlishi. Now, the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we just mentioned about Rav Chanina, Rav Oshia, is interpreted in a very novel way by Rashi. He says that the Egel was Gadol Shlish Gidulo. That the it wasn't that this was the third Shlish, because how could you say it was created from the Sefer Yetzirah and it's number three? But rather, it was born as a very strong animal. That's how they created it. And as a result, the strength of the animal was equal to an Igla Tilsa, which is the eagle that's raised, number three, and in an eagle that's one-third of its lifespan also has that extra strength. Now what's fascinating to me here is, how did they eat this tilsa if it was created through Sefer Yetzirah? What status does it have? Is it a kosher animal? You know, kosher animal means that it came from a species of kosher animals, but this was created through Sefer Yetzirah. I don't know exactly why or how you could derive a heter shechita in such a case. Amru le, so the household of Rav Ashi said to Rav Ashi, I'm sorry, they said to Rav Yeshua, Lito mar midi, perhaps you would taste some of this suda that we arranged, that this beautiful banquet on your behalf. Amar lahu Rav Yeshua said, I have to decline, even though I thank you so much for the honor. Why? Because the betainis yasivna, I'm sitting in tainis. Amru levelo sovrele mar laha to Rav Yehuda, the Omer of Yehuda, love odom ta'aniso porea. If you accept it upon yourself to fast, you can, I don't know if you're allowed to, but if you ate on that day, you can replace it with a tainis on a different day. So that, why don't you eat today from the banquet that we prepared for you, and another day you'll be mashlim the tainis. Amalahu, Rav Yehuda says, you don't understand. I can't replace this tainis with a different tainis. Why? Because I had a bad dream. Tainis chalomu. V'yomar Rav bar Machas, Yomar Rav Gnomar Rav, Yofe tainis lechalom, Ke'esh ladiores, V'yomar Rav Chizdu bo bayom, V'yomar Rav Yosef ilu b'shabes. So you see that the significance of fasting for a tainis on that very day is such that Rabbi Yeshua had to decline this wonderful meal of an igla tilsa that they had prepared in his honor. Rabbi Yeshua
had to bring also Rav Yosef. Now, l'chor Rav Yosef here is irrelevant. Rav Yosef says, afilu b'shavis. Why wasn't it enough just to say the statement of Rav Chisda that you have to fast bo bayo? But the answer is, kan medubar b'suda shal talmidei chacham mitzuyim b'avarei sudas mitzvah yosel ishtamit menu. He says that the challenge here that Rav Yeshua was facing is that there was a special mitzvah to eat and partake of that seuda, and it wouldn't be very nice, it wouldn't be acceptable for him to try to get out of it. But Shevi Yeshlomo Shetitcha Taniso Machma Sudas Mitzvah, so let him push off the tainus, and that's what they were arguing. There's a Sudas Mitzvah that's in your honor. Why don't you just, you know, postpone the tainus and you'll make it up on a different day? So that's where Rabbi Yeshua quotes Rabbi Yosef that Af b'Shabbos tzorch l'sanos tanis chalon, that even on Shabbos you have to fast this fast. Well, why not just delay the fast until Sunday? But the answer is that's the chashivas of bo bayom, to fast on that very day. Do we have another 5 minutes, Ira? So the Mishnah says in Mischilu, you're not supposed to start a meal when it's time for Mincha, but if you already started the meal, then ain mafsikin. We allow you to finish the meal. Mafsikin with Kriyachma, but if it's the time for Kriyachma, then you have to stop eating and recite Kriyachma. For Tefillah, you don't have to stop. You shouldn't have started, but once you began your meal, then you ain mafsikin with Tefillah. So the Gemara asks, Hatani le Reisha. It says in the Reisha of the Mishnah, Im eschilu ein mafsikin. So why do you have to repeat himself and say ein mafsikin l'tfilah? So Gemara answers, that which we learned in the Sefer, Asoin l'divrei Torah, the Mishnah is adding a new chiddush. And that is that a person who hasn't started a meal, in which case he's allowed to continue the meal and delay his tefillah, but rather instead he started learning Torah. And he doesn't have to interrupt his learning for the purpose of tefillah. And that's a new din that's not included in the beginning of the Mishnah. The beginning of the Mishnah is only addressing a case where he started eating. And how do I know that you're allowed to delay your tefillah for the sake of limud Torah once you started learning? The sanyim into the brisa, chaverim shayu oskim batorah mafsikim lekriyachma, but ain mafsikim l'tefillah. Now I'm not sure what he means by chaverim here. Probably serious people, but they're learning Torah. And when Kriyat Shema comes around, that's a mitzvah d'orais. They have to terminate on a temporary basis. Obviously, they're learning in order to recite Kriyat Shema. But when Tefillah comes around, they don't have to terminate. They continue their learning, even though it's time for davening. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Lo Shanu. When do we say that if you're learning Torah, you don't have to be mafsik your learning in order to daven? Elokigon Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai v'chaver v'shatorosum nosan. Only if you're on the level of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Obviously, that's a special category, torosum noso. Later on, the Gemara is going to clarify that when Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and his son Rabbi Loza were in the cave, and it was time to daven, they got up and they got dressed and they davened. So when the Zman Tefillah came, they got dressed and they davened. So how come here the Gemara says, Ein mafsikin l'tefillah? So it could be that Litzluye, when the Gemara says they got up Litzluye, the father and the son, that was only for Kriyat Shema, but not for Tefillah itself. For Tefillah, perhaps they would have continued their studies. Aval kagon anu, says Rabbi Yochanan, but we're not on the same level as Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and therefore mafsikin lekriyat shema utfila. We have to terminate our learning for the sake of kriyat shema and for the sake of tefillah of davening. So Gemara Sakash Vasanya, we have a brisa that says Kishem Shein Mafsikin with Tfila, Kach Ein Mafsikin with Kriyat Shema. In other words, even someone who's Toroso Umnoso, just like he doesn't have to terminate his learning for the sake of Tfila, he doesn't have to terminate his learning for the sake of Kriyat Shema. And that seems to be against Rabbi Yochanan, who holds that in the case of Toros Omnoso, he has to be mafsik for Kriyat Shema. The Gemara answers, Ki Toni Ahi Be'ibur Shana. That brisa that says, E mafsik le Kriyat Shema, that's talking about those who are Osek in Ibur Shana, and they were Olim Shiva Anoshim Laliyah. There were seven people who went up to the higher roof, to the attic, and they would deliberate whether or not the year needs an extra month of Adar, and it should be a Shana Muberes. And during that Masumatan, during that deliberation, it was so critical, they would not stop the deliberation even for the sake of Kriyat Shema. The Omer of Adbarava, Chintonu, Sabi de Hargonia, Hagronia, Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, Kishayinu Oskim v'Ibur Shana v'Yavna, Lo Yinu Mafsikin Lo L'Kriyat Shema v'Lo L'Tfila. Because here the whole nation is dependent upon them to make this important decision of Ibur Shana, that they weren't allowed to be Mafsik even for the sake of Kriyat Shema. Because even though Kriyat Shema is Minat Torah, but nevertheless, it's trumped by the what we call it Tzarchei Rabim, and deciding on the Ibur Shana is called Tzarchei Rabim, because Shelo Yiskalkulu HaMoedos, and for all other reasons that they decide to add another month of Hadar. So we're not going to be Mafsik for Kriyat Shema. Now what about other Oskim B'Tzarchei Tzibur? He says, "Eino mafsikim mishum shehem oskim b'mitzvah." Then, for other people, we could call it oskim b'mitzvah, and oskim b'mitzvah is potter min mitzvah. Now, there's a brisa in Sanhedrin that says, "Al bishul atfuad shadayin lo hechel al tkufas tamush asuya limoshech aracher chag sukkis al tkufas tevish is arachad tesayin amo tesayin nisan." So there are many, many different reasons and shikulim that go into the decision of Ibur Shana. So this leads us to the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Here, Hashem, we'll do that tomorrow.